Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. I am your host, Chris Seveny. Today, I have a special guest. I have John Jasniak with Jazz Land, and we are going to be talking about land investing. So, John, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thank you so much for having me, man. Looking forward to chatting with you.
Yep. So looking forward to it as well. I love talking all aspects of real estate, and land has been something that has, over the last several years, I think really piqued a lot of people's interest, especially because of availability, price point, and appreciation, like most real estate assets. For me, land, you're not dealing with tenants typically, which is always a benefit to not having to deal with them. But that's John, right. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing today, and then we'll kind of rewind it back, talk about how you got in the space and the story for how you got to today.
Here we are, September 2023. It's crazy. It's been almost 7 years since I've first started this adventure. And today I'm doing pretty much these massive subdivide projects where I'm buying hundreds of acres at a time and creating lots and selling them off to customers, a lot of owner financing and originating a lot of notes, and started to embark, I guess, on a couple other crazy creative projects, buying the small unincorporated town, trying to work with that, these big subdivides getting more and more difficult with the projects. But it's been 7 years now since I've just started buying one-off pieces of land and creating notes, 200, 300, 500 a month and flipping them. Crazy to look back on it, man. But like you said, land has been piquing a lot of people's interests nowadays, and I'm seeing more and more demand for land than ever.
You mentioned, 7 years ago, did you just wake up one morning, or did you take a, see something online, a little bit more background? Like, how did you get into land?
Well, I was a 9-to-5 employee. I was a petroleum engineer, and I liked what I did, to be honest, but I didn't like going into the office. And I would listen to probably 10, 15, 20 hours of podcasts a week, read a bunch of books. I was like, man, there's got to be something more to do, especially to make some more money, and especially passive income, because I was tired of working at the office 12 hours a day. I wanted more cash flow. I was listening to a podcast called The Side Hustle Show, and another land guy like myself came on, was talking about the business. And, started talking about his course and what was possible with land investing and land flipping. And so I bought his course and one other course, and I started studying these two courses. And after about a month or so, I was like, okay, I'm gonna dive in and buy my first piece of land. And I had a little bit of bankroll to start with for my engineering salary. And I bought a 53 acres out in Hudspeth County, Texas for $8,500. And it was five. Wait,
53 acres for $8,500?
That's right. It's 160, 170 per acre. You can still find land that cheap out there nowadays, by the way, in certain places of Texas, Arizona, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I buy this piece and it's already like subdivided into five separate, like 10.6 acre lots. And I started selling off these five lots and they all sold in like a month. And I basically doubled my money. I made like 17 or 18,000 gross. And so, I doubled my money. I was like, okay. So I immediately started direct mailing and looking online and trying to find more deals. And, I was buying 10 acre lots out in Texas for like 1500 or 2000 bucks and turning around and selling them for five, seven, 10,000 and originating 150 for 72 months notes and collecting passive income. And it's kind of just snowballed from there.
As a civil engineer, I've got like 1,000 questions as well as part of this. When you're buying 50 acres, you subdivide it into five parcels. Are you, just leaving the properties with as is, not pulling in any utilities or putting in any types of wells or septic systems or pulling any public utilities? Or is that how you typically will do it?
On the quote unquote desert square stuff, which is more recreational land in the middle of nowhere, it's not going to have utilities. That's its use is just rec land and definitely not pulling in utilities. And what's crazy is a lot of pieces of land out there have already been subdivided. For your beginner, that's how you're able to go in and buy 1, 5, 10 acre lots. Because people, like what I'm doing nowadays with these big subdivides, like people did that back in the 80s and 90s. And then they sold all these pieces of cheap land off on the internet. Mm-hmm. And now you got folks who are starting to get into the land game and direct mailing and SMS, cold calling people. And they're calling them on these little 5 acre lots in the middle of nowhere. They're picking them up for, you know, $2,000 and selling them for $5,000. Created this huge arbitrage and niche in the market.
Mm-hmm. I did want to jump back because I also heard you say that in the process or looking at buying an unincorporated town?
I did buy it. That would have been 8 months ago now, and it's been a whole project. It's in the same area, Hudspeth County, Texas. Mm-hmm. The town's called Cornutus, and it's got a motel, cafe, RV park, a few mobile homes on it. It's 28 acres. And yeah, that's why I just got back a week out there. We redid the roof on the cafe and spent almost $100,000 in electrical and HVAC mini split systems because I never had any air conditioning on any of these buildings. They use space heaters, swamp coolers, if you know what those are, and it created a lot of problems out there.
Could you corporate the town, create your own government for the town, put a school in and like just put your own subdivision rules and town like rules and regulations for zoning and, you know, do whatever you want? Just curious what you can do with that.
Yeah, well, I could technically one day I would have to buy more land around it and start subdividing and creating lots and creating infrastructure. But yeah, anything's possible. That's one thing I like about land. I think we were chatting about this before we hopped on, like all the different aspects of real estate. Some are dying off, like there's some hot crazes and some things are going away. But land has never gone away. And you can literally do just about anything with land, whether it's building a town, building assisted living complex, doing short-term rentals, building an RV park on it. And so I think that's what I love about it. It's the ground floor. And so there's always a demand for it. The earth is not getting any bigger and it's always going to be there.
So let's talk a little bit about now. I mean, I love talking land and fascinating how it's such a niche where, you know, especially if you can buy up these parcels, which I think you're doing now, and then turn around and subdivide them, even enhance your returns even more. Now, when you turn around and sell, let's say you buy, I'm just going to keep simple numbers here, 10 acres, 10 lots, each an acre per lot, you buy it and then you turn around and sell these. I'm guessing you're probably doing like a seller financing owner carry with some of these borrowers, or are they paying cash?
Well, I'm doing a lot of things. When I buy the land, I'm actually buying a lot of it with seller financing and doing wraparound notes and then owner financing it off to my customers. But yes, I think what you're getting at is when I go to sell the land, 90% of my sales are probably are owner financed. And then I sell those notes to investors and cash out if and when I need to. So I hold a giant note portfolio, all self-managed, probably a handful of good note buyers who I work with. And when I need capital, I'll sell them a good performing land note.
How many notes roughly right now do you have in your portfolio out of curiosity?
150 to 200, just varies.
So do you self-service those or do you use a servicer?
Self-service. I use the mortgage office as my loan servicing platform. And then we have ACH processing. So I'll take monthly payment, small little accounting team that helps me on the back end, keeping track of it all. But a lot of it's myself. We send the notices. Me and my ops manager will send notices. We'll foreclose people. We got a foreclosure coming up in a week and a half. We'll be at the courthouse steps in Texas, taking some land back and reselling it for more, hopefully.
It's interesting because, again, we invest in notes and distressed notes. We use the mortgage office as well. So it's same software. It doesn't matter which type of loans you're doing. And like you said, you know, as well, whatever type of note you hold, A, you're the bank, which I prefer being the bank because you can control everything. And even the court cases where you do have a foreclosure here and there, you're probably going to take that property back. And then you can turn around and just, you know, resell it on a new seller financing note is probably what I'm guessing is what you're going to do, right?
We'll collect another down payment. I like to keep my down payments relatively low because the lower the down payment, obviously, the more people can afford to buy it. It does raise your default rate a little bit, not a lot, but for sure a little bit. But as long as that's a really good asset that you can resell for the same, if not more money, then why not? It's basically an ATM machine in my mind, at least.
Just out of curiosity, rough numbers. If I was financing $25,000 property from you, you know, what are your typical interest rate payments? How do you have a secret sauce that you like to structure these things with? Or does it really just vary depending on the borrower?
Pretty much do have, I guess, a proprietary thing that I'd like to keep in mind. And number one, I don't like to go longer than a 10-year note. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know as a note buyer, I mean, the longer term your note is, the more discount applied to it up front if I were to ever go to sell the note. So I think 10 years or less are the most marketable notes. Yep. the lower I can shorten that term, the better, because I get my money back quicker and also less of a discount to a note buyer at the end of the day, if and when I go to sell that note. I found $500 a month to $1,500 per month is the sweet spot as far as what sellers can afford. So if I can get it over $500 per month, the default rate goes down. If I can get it up to $1,000, $1,500 per month, even better. As you go over $1,500 per month, less people can afford that. So when I'm selling a piece of land and saying, hey, you got to pay me $2,000 per month, there's not a lot of people who can afford that. And at that level, they're probably going to the bank and getting their own financing anyway. So that's kind of how I think about it. I always charge 7% interest, because I don't really think of it in terms of interest as much. I get this question a lot. My deal is the face value of the note. That's what I'm marketing at the end of the day. And my marketing process, when I go to advertise this land, I actually advertise, okay, you're paying me $500 a month for 60 months. And that includes interest. If I were to charge more interest, my principal would actually drop. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to, I think it would even out in the wash when I went to sell the note. If I charged more interest, the note buyer would discount it less and buy it for more today. However, if I charge more interest, I'd probably be lowering my face value for that same monthly payment to a potential buyer of mine. So it's kind of really getting in the weeds, but that's how I think about it. Less in terms of interest, more in terms of just total sales price.
Also depends on the value and everything. The way it popped in my head when you're talking is you try and make it be a car payment, you know, roughly about what a car payment is. And interestingly enough, for what we have found, I'm curious if you have found this with some of these notes that we have bought, and you have loans that are only $200, $300, $400 per month. Those have a higher default rate than the ones that have $500, $600, because I find that the people who are in those really don't have the affordability and are literally balancing their checkbook down to the dollar every month. I had a borrower once who could balance his checkbook, and every month he finished with like $3 in his account. I should actually hire this guy because he knows how to manage his money well, where he finishes every month with $3. But I'm curious part of that. And the other thing that you, I'll just tag on to what you said for people listening. You know, a lot of people do get hung up on the interest rate, but you had a huge point that people need to take away. I would buy a loan that is at 5 to 10 years at 7%, 100% of the time than a 30-year loan at 10 or 12% or 15 years. When you look at your velocity of money on that, the difference on a $30,000, $50,000 loan, a percent here and there, you know, it's $500 a year. But that principal payment, that total monthly P&I payment is going to be significantly higher, which will juice up the returns.
Yeah, for sure. And this is something that I highly recommend to people: download a good loan calculator. There's a few out there where you can lock inputs and adjust everything else. And I'm on that thing daily. You got to know your numbers and get familiar with it all. And back to your point, the monthly payments, for sure, the lower you go, the higher default rate is going to be. That's why I kind of moved away from your Hudspeth County 10-acre lots in the middle of nowhere, because people who are buying that only want to spend $100, $200, $300 a month on that piece of desert. They care less about it. They got less money invested every month. They're not as savvy financially. They're probably going to default 25, 30% of the time. Like, it is that high of a default rate. Now, me, I could reshuffle the paper and resell that land again, and it does become sort of an ATM machine. But you get to a certain level like myself, where you're managing, call it 200 notes. And if they were all notes like that in a desert, it would be a nightmare. It'd be like a full-time job for me or multiple people trying to resell those and spending money on marketing. It's like, I'm sure you know, as an investor, we just want our money, and we want the people who are paying us to be happy, whether it's with their house, their car, their land.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly, with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you.
You mentioned you sell these two and so forth. If somebody was an investor and said, hey, John, I listened to the podcast, I'd be interested in learning a little bit more about buying a note from you. What would you call a prototypical note buyer of land? What's that avatar that you've seen?
Two avatars, really, I would say. One is your average person who wants monthly cash flow. They're probably working 9 to 5. They have some money saved up. It's probably getting 5, 7, 8% interest, whatever, in a money market account or at the bank nowadays. Obviously, a lot less before interest rates increase. and they want some monthly cash flow, and they have $30,000, maybe $100,000 to spend. So they buy some performing land notes and they get their monthly cash flow. Then the second avatar is the savvy investors. They know that they can probably get a little bit higher rate of return on land notes versus house notes or some of these other assets. And there's a lot of opportunity in the land space when it comes to notes, because you got a lot of good land being subdivided, creating good paper lots. And as long as you trust the operator being myself in this case, as long as that investor trusts the operator and they're doing a good job with their projects, then there's huge opportunity to go in, either buy a portfolio of notes, multiple notes, and offload 200, 500, a million bucks and get a note portfolio that is performing for land. I'm going to ask, what do you kind of target for your IRR, or your yield when you're buying a note? What do you want to make annually, you think, as an investor?
For us, on the performing side, we want to be in the low double digits, you know, is where we'll try and target. And then on the non-performing stuff, no, we want to be in low 20s on the non-performing stuff, just because of the risk and the time. It varies depending on everybody. If you're using your own capital or if you're using other people's capital, what's your cost of capital? But one of the things that you mentioned that I just want to touch upon, and I'll let you jump back to your follow-up question, is you mentioned the sponsor and the person writing this paper. And for people listening, that is one of the biggest and most important things to take away for anybody who's buying notes, real estate. It doesn't matter what you're buying, is who is on the other side of that transaction. And you want to make sure it's somebody who's experienced and, you know, I'll say ethical. So I know there's people out there who are writing paper on many different aspects that, A, they don't have experience or ethics, and it just... Now they're selling this thing and it's just a lawsuit waiting to happen sometimes.
That's right. They're either not following subdivision regulations or not putting easements where they need to, or there's a million different things that could go wrong with a land project, and they're selling those notes off to investors. But you mentioned low double digit on performing land notes. And this is touching back to my point when it comes to land. I usually see 15 to 20% is what I'm giving investors for their annual return. It's a little bit higher on the land side, which is, I think, why it's attractive to a lot of folks. And I'm more than fine with that. I'm giving people on average probably 16 to 18% annualized rate of return, my note buyers, and I apply my discount to principal value from there. And back to interest, not focusing as much on interest rate and all that. My yields myself on these projects, my IRR is over 100%. Like, I don't touch a subdivision project unless it's over 100% annualized rate of return for Jazz Land. And so I'm more than happy giving an investor 18, 20% if it's going to move some notes and get some capital flowing and allow me to do more projects. So it's a win-win for everybody.
That's a great returns, and for, especially for both parties. So it's a win-win. Now, a question I always have to ask is, when I hear great numbers, is, you know, what are some of the risks involved in this?
The biggest risk for someone buying a note, or even for myself, is that the payer stops paying. I had one like that with a note buyer of mine here recently. The thing with me is I always try to sell what I think are my highest performing notes, and it creates more of a headache for me because I'm stuck managing the less quality performers and the payers, but my reputation's on the line. So I don't want to sell you or whoever a bunch of junky notes and I lost an investor in the future. So my investor bought a note from me and the person stopped paying, and I will actually help folks resell them. It's pretty easy for us. We just hop back into our CRM or Facebook. Yeah. Blast off a message, hey, this land is still available, or came back on the market. It was funny. This one I was able to resell for him the next day. Like, hey, so-and-so stopped paying. And I sent out a message to probably 100 folks and someone's like, I want it, I want it. So the next day we had paperwork cooked up and a down payment check to him within a week. And he hit me up. He's like, you really resold this in a day? And I was like, yes, sir.
When you generate the notes, are you creating traditional deed of trust and note? Are you doing land contract? What's your path? That
definitely deed of trust and note secured and recorded at the county clerk's office. Depends on the state, depends on the situation. The only time I would basically recommend using a contract is on really small desert squares, small notes in the middle of nowhere. And there's advantages to that, but there's a lot of disadvantages. The main one being a lot of investors do not like buying contract for deeds. So, you know, when I sell my note buyers contract for deeds, they don't want to touch it, or they apply a huge discount. So definitely a deed of trust with prom note.
4 or 5 years ago, I got in a note space. About 7 years ago, on the residential side, land contracts were a really hot thing because a lot of the paper that was originated right after 2008. You know, there was a lot of what was happening was there's three major companies went in and were buying from Fannie homes thousands at a time and just turning around and selling them, not even doing anything to them, and just turn around and selling them to borrowers on land contracts. And then essentially it was great 5 years ago, but as the state started catching up on the land contracts and treating them like a traditional mortgage, gives no incentive at all to have them. And it's actually a hindrance. I've got one right now. Borrower's performing, but he doesn't live in the property and it's vacant. So we're getting violations for cutting the lawn, the gutters, this, and I'm getting notices to show up in court. And I'm like, you know, I'm not the owner. And like, you are in the deed. It's a land contract. They're like, we don't care. It's yours. Your problem. Yeah, it's curious.
I 100% agree. Do it once and do it right, in my opinion. If you can create the right paperwork and solidify with a deed of trust and investors like it, it's a win-win.
As we wrap up this episode, question I'll ask is, where do you see your company in the next 3 to 5 years?
The goal for me is to be the most known person in the land space and help as many people as I can buy and own land and originate notes and make money from land investing. Personally, I want to have a $100 million land business. Right now, it's around the $10 million mark, and we got a lot of big projects in the work. I could really 10x this thing over the next 3 to 5 years. That's where my mind is focused. And that means a giant note portfolio, working with a lot of investors and doing a lot of monster subdivides.
Wow, that's awesome goal. And when people talk about that, put the plan in place and it's attainable. In notes, the interesting thing with our portfolio was I maxed out at probably like 300 notes at one point in time. Now I'm down to about 150, but the size of my portfolio is 4x because the size of the note has gotten larger. It's something that the note space and is extremely scalable from that standpoint. But if you do want to grow, I guess, you know, next question is, if people want to learn more about your business, how they could invest with you, buy notes from you, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Sure. It's at John Jasniak on any social media. Hit me up. I answer all my DMs, messages, comments, any of that stuff. And then it's john@johnjasniak.com. If you got a land project, if you have anything you want to just send my way to get a quick look, opinion, feedback, whatever. I literally love looking at deals. I tell this to people all the time. Like, I'm obsessed. People send me a land deal. What do you think about this? And I'm like, absolutely not. Or, oh, this is a perfect project. Do it this way. Subdivide it just like this. And it's like, I don't know. I'm literally addicted to this stuff.
Now, are you only in Texas or you go other states?
I do most of my investing in Texas. I have done other states, but right now it's all Texas. And some of our folks in the groups and stuff we got going on, they work nationwide. So I help them with that. But for me, I love Texas.
John, thanks for coming on today. And for our listeners, thanks for listening. We'll have all of John's contact information in the show notes. And thank you all for listening to this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. Thank you all.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.